Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Oh, hello everybody. Welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast. We ruined a horror movie just for you.
Just Allison, for all of you.
How are you doing?
How dare you ask me
no,
first?
No, I need you. I need a minute for my brain
yes,
to warm up.
All right, I'll ramble here for a second
Thank
about
you.
How I'm doing. I'm fine.
Okay, great.
I do. We're in my favorite time of year, food wise, for at home snacking because we're in good fall produce. So really good apples and grapes. Which
Love
I like.
An apple grape, absolutely.
Apples and grapes. And like having like a bag of clementines just like on the counter at all times just to like grab one. I mean, it's just like that. I'm at my healthiest in October and that's it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I do like the idea of the change in the seasons and how it changes how we eat.
Yeah, just because like, you know, I'm very particular. Like my grape ranking is good red grapes, good green grapes, bad red grapes.
What do you feel about a Concord grape?
I like a Concord grape, but like hard to find great ones all year, you know? Yeah. I did have some Concord grapes the other day at Natasha's.
They're so fucking good.
They're so good. But for just like day-to-day grocery grapes, that's my ranking. And so we're in good red grape season.
I'm going to have to check this out. I feel like I have been tending towards fruit that you could keep in the fridge for a really long time and won't go bad right away.
Tell me more.
Yeah, my once again, like everything in my life,
apples
dictated
and oranges.
By my nascent ADHD. Not nascent. Nascent to me. So remember to always keep your produce on the door of the fridge, guys. You're never going to go wrong because then you get to see all of it. It's very helpful.
I feel like I never look at the door of my fridge.
See, I'm a condiment. I operate like on a condiment hot sauce dip economy, so I'm constantly looking at the door. I'm constantly referencing what can I put on this to make it taste better. But I support you. It's also
I don't keep my hot sauce in the fridge, so that's just out.
I have just so many bugs. Like I'm just so paranoid.
Yeah,
I can't leave out anything. Like you're right. I mean, it probably would be fine. They wouldn't eat it, but like I don't know.
It's I know. It's just like the more food that's out, the more chance there is for bugs. I get that.
Just using my hot sauce when I'm asleep. Little sons of bitches.
They're in there putting on their tiny, tiny chicken wings.
I hate them so much.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what's new with me. It's fall produce, and I'm excited. What is happening with you?
Literally just working. And I'm trying to fit in some spooky season stuff. I have failed so far. But I really want to go to somewhere. I was going to do Universal Horror Nights, but I haven't been able to find people who are available to go. But I was like, is it so incredibly lame to go alone?
I don't know.
It's preferable to be scared with other people. Is it off-putting to go alone to be scared? I guess that's my question. That's
yeah,
my theory.
I mean, I guess it depends.
Yeah. Like so many things.
Like
you
so
said
many
it.
Things. I have no answer.
Yeah. And speaking of things that we've said, we have not said this month's theme.
Yes.
And this, of course, is Thanksgiving. And Yay. We've done family in the past.
Yes.
And I'm trying to think of what the last one was, but we are going to do the theme this month is They Ate. So it is
it.
Both about, you better believe it's, of course, about cannibalism, but it's also about performances, just to be able to mix it up in which they ate. Mm-hmm. And I think that offers us a breadth of films that we're excited to dive into.
Yes.
But the first one we're doing is, of course, a movie that takes this very literally.
Yes.
And that, of course, is the 1999 film Ravenous. And it was directed by Antonia Bird. who did a phenomenal job. And I'm trying to think what else she has done. The movie Faith. Oh, actually, she was a producer. That's the TV show. What am I even doing? I should have read her Wikipedia. It's a name I'm familiar with. And so I'm like, oh, I've heard of her. And I'm looking at her movies. I'm like, I guess I've heard of her. Have I seen any single thing that she has done? No.
Well, now you've seen this.
And it's great. And I really enjoyed it. And it is a movie where it's a period horror movie, which is not something that I particularly care for normally. But I think they really nail it.
Really?
Which part?
That you don't care for them normally?
Well, I think it's like how you don't like movies that are old, which I think is insane. Like movies that are set in the past, I'm like,
no, I don't
you guys
not
had
like
a lot
them.
More
I find
to
them
deal
less
with.
Scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't mean I don't like them. I probably like them more.
Oh, interesting.
Because they're less scary.
Okay, fair. Yes, you're right. I am interpreting from your statement that they're less scary that you like them less, which isn't the case.
Right, that's the opposite.
Yeah, but I guess in this case, I simply am like watching this. I'm like, well, slavery was still legal, so I just don't.
Yeah,
you know, where are we going with
draw
this?
Draw the line for horror. Yeah.
And this, of course, was set in the 1840s in California, and this is a riff on the famous Donner Party. And my friend Kamaria, shout out to Kamaria, is in town. My college friend, she hadn't heard of the Donner Party. Are you familiar with the Donner Party?
Yes, of course.
I feel like I swear to God it. They taught us about it in school. Which, looking back, it's like, well, we had other things we could have been learning about. Why would they teach us that?
I don't know that I learned about it in school. Though maybe I did. Where else would I have learned it? It was like pre-internet.
I feel like cannibalism specifically, because that's of course what this film is about. It does sort of trickle into society as one of these taboo things that like we are both repulsed by and love to read about to sort of understand why it happens. And of course, the Donner Party, well, I don't even want to get into the specifics because it is horrible, but they famously, due to an attempt at a shortcut, essentially got stuck in the Sierra Nevadas over the winter. And you just don't want to do that. The conclusion of that, and I think the conclusion of this film is something similar.
Yes.
Just don't do any of this.
Just don't do it. Don't do anything. do nothing.
We always like to have Allison watch the trailer. Allison, what did you think of the Ravenous trailer?
What a cast.
Star-studded. Guy Pearce, Robert Carlyle, Jeffrey Jones.
David Arquette.
Everyone's
Dewey himself.
He's sort of doing a Dewey from Scream if it
I
was
think
the
that
1840s.
That's what he does.
That's why you hire him.
Yeah, he's great. Are there any women in this movie?
There is one woman. Yes, thank you for clocking.
I was like, all right, a bunch of men eating each other, I guess.
She is Sheila Mae Tusey. She is a Native American actress, and she's playing a Native American character. And she's the only woman and has a level of just exhaustion that I imagine this one would actually have with all the events of this film. That is very funny.
Yes.
But she's been in a ton of stuff. Again, none that I've seen, but we support her. Mm-hmm. It is, again, people that I wouldn't normally, well, I guess Jeffrey Jones, didn't he go to jail for child pornography? I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Oh, God. I was going to praise him. Yes, he did. He did. In 2003, he pleaded no kindness to a charge of soliciting a minor to pose for nude photographs.
Hey.
Okay, great. Sorry, everyone. He's in this movie. Well, at least he was punished for his crime, I suppose.
Yeah. All right.
So we got that going for us.
Justice.
If there's any other criminals on the cast that have yet to be revealed, we apologize in advance for us talking about their good work in this. Very, again, also stars, like, incredible. I would be on this guy, a horrible person, as it turns out. We also take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of eating human flesh and loving it?
Very. Very.
Please expound.
I don't want to eat human flesh. I'd like to go on record and say that. I have no interest. But I would be afraid that, like, if I was in a position where it's like, you will die if you don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you'd like.
Oh, you'd have to.
I could never kill someone to eat them, but no. if they were, you know, if we got a plate for the table.
If someone else was cooking.
If someone else was cooking. If they already died and you're like, well,
what else are we supposed to do? And then what if that experience is so transformative, Allison, it redirects the purpose of your life?
I don't.
Yikes.
Uh-oh.
That's
this feels conclusion. Very male. Like, men, like, have one interest at a time.
Well, I mean, and there is something to this where they are explicitly making the connection between cannibalism and manifest destiny.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea that we will, as white men, consume all of North America and it is our right and our nature and mm-hmm. it's for our own pleasure and whatever else happens. Fortunately, do they get theirs, Allison?
Oh, I hope so.
And boy, do they. It's also plays off the real life story of the Colorado cannibal, Alfred Packer, who survived sort of a Donner Party type situation by eating five of his companions.
Five people?
After getting stuck in the San Juan Mountains in the 1870s. Good Lord, that's a lot of people,
that's
Allison.
That's a lot. How long was he?
You know, and also the inspiration for the incredible musical, Cannibal the Musical.
Oh.
By the Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the guys behind South Park, was like an early work. My family had a VHS and we were obsessed with that movie. Let's see how long he was there. And Alfred Packer did get a sentence of 40 years in prison after it looked like he did kill them to eat them. So yeah. I do agree that is the distinction.
Yeah.
Because he just can't kill. Yeah. Allison, he ate five people between November 1873 and April. Okay, between November 1873 and then April 1874. So it's at least
months and months.
Months.
It wasn't like a long weekend.
No, thankfully. And I guess five over a matter of, 6 months? I guess.
It's less than a person a month.
Which seems, even that seems like quite a bit of person, but
yeah.
Again, if you have nothing else to eat.
If that's the only food you can consume.
Yeah, boy. I mean, he must have just been jacked. He must be like, have you seen that tech guy who's like, I drink my son's blood or something to see become a vampire? It's like, cool, dude, you look insane.
You look insane.
But, yeah.
I bet you're not fun to hate. Like, the appeal of being like, I look like I'm in my 20s, but I'm in my 40s. And I'm like, I assume you're doing this for women. I don't know who wants that.
Well, I think like a lot of things, people do it for the idea of a woman.
Yes.
Like what a
yes.
woman would want or what a man would want. And I think he's a great example of like, well, maybe the woman you've invented in your head who is also you.
Right. Well, it's like that weird theoretical thing of like, I'm like, doing everything so a woman is attracted to me. And then it's like, well, no one wants to go on a date where the guy's like, I'm just going to go to sleep at 7 p.m. and I just drink blood. And it's like, well, that's not fun.
Yeah. And also somebody pointed this out, which is true, because the tech back billionaire we're talking about, is that Brian Johnson, he's clearly on estrogen, like a low level, like he has, I don't know what you call it, an estrogenic look. Like he, you know, his skin, it's one of those things where I think like he looks younger, but for the rest of us, it just looks like he's on estrogen, which is totally fine. But those aren't the same thing.
No, they are not.
But it's like his brain was like, now I look younger. It's like, you look like a luminous man.
He's starting to look like the Uncanny Valley.
It is. Like, he's made decisions that don't necessarily, like, what he's going for does not align with where he is physically going.
Yeah.
And so the gap becomes wider and wider between, like, I look great. It's like, well, you don't look bad for what you're going for, but you seem unaware of it. You know what I mean?
You're kind of, like, no longer part of, like, what all of us are doing. Looks wise,
his and the worst thing about, I'm going to say this, and this I don't need to indict this man any more than we have, the hair dye,
the color
must dye it himself. It looks like a wig.
It's not
a good wig. It looks like a wig for Ricky's.
It's like if you're going to go
yes
the extremes of like drinking or consuming blood and sleeping at strange and all this and like completely overhaul your lifestyle to look younger. Like, go into a good salon. You're rich.
Yeah, don't just get a box of Clairol and do it in the airport bathroom, like, like as if you're changing identities, like, which is what it looks like.
Yes.
It looks so unnatural, so bad. He's also styled it and cut it horribly. I think he probably cut his own hair.
Yeah, the styling, I saw, like, a photo of him, and it's,
you
like,
know exactly
it's the
what
hair,
we're talking about.
The skin, and then he's, like, the clothing choices are certainly choices, and there's just kind of a lot of look.
I feel like you could meet that guy at a party and be like, that the man you meet is filled with a joie de vivre because, or person that you've met, that, like, they're going for this with intention to be, like, stylistically liberatory or, like, I'm expressing myself and, like, this makes sense to me, rather than this is joyless. You could see that this guy isn't even enjoying. He's like,
no.
I figured it out.
This is a full-time job.
Yeah, like, and it's like, that's fine if you want to wear a little slutty tank top and, like, drink your dad's blood or whatever the fuck they're doing. But, like, at least look like you're enjoying it. And, like, at least pretend.
Have some fun with it.
Put a smile on your face, honey. Like, come on. Oh, well, you know what? Look, and as we age too, eventually, when we're, you know, when my eyes are on the fucking side of my head like a fucking hammerhead shark, it'll be funny for me to look back and think of these criticisms.
You'll barely have to turn your head to look back. It'll just be a quarter turn.
Perfect. But it does make sense. This is our modern version of cannibalism, taking the blood from others to restore our vitality, and such as they do in the phenomenal movie Ravenous. And we'll get into it, obviously. But one of the great things about it is there are decisions that are made that make it a horror comedy, a dark comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That,
well, David Arquette.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of the music choices are comedy music choices.
Mm.
Which is insane. And especially in the certain scenes where they come out, I'm like, that is not what I would have chosen.
Horror cannibal movie. Comedy music choices.
There are certain songs where, like, you might as well put, like, Yakety Sax under this shit. Like, when they're, like, running around. But let us get into it. Before we start, would you like to guess the twist in Ravenous, Allison?
Guess the twist.
So, like, my loose guess is what's happening is that...
And you're nothing but loose guesses, I'll tell you that much.
That, like... It is like an army fort or whatever, but I'm guessing like the guy who started the cannibalism killed all of his soldiers and lied to the U.S. Army about it.
Great.
And then ate them.
Excellent work. Okay, great. Now this began ruining Ravenous. We open with two excellent quotes. I would like to write a horror movie that opens with three quotes because I think comedy lives in the three.
Mm.
And then it's just funny. So here are the two quotes we have with. He that fights with monsters should look to it that he himself does not become a monster. Friedrich Nietzsche. Nietzsche. His name is misspelled in the on the screen. And then
is that a choice
quote,
or just a mistake?
I think it was a mistake and I celebrate it. And the second quote is simply the phrase, eat me. And it is credited to Anonymous. Allison, here we are in 1847 in California. And we open on our main character, John Boyd. He's a U.S. Army captain. He's played by Guy Pearce, who is great in this film. He has, like, no lines. And it's just him looking extremely distressed the entire time. Like, he's our in. So every time we cut to him, he's like, oh, no. He's great in this. So he's receiving a military medal for bravery in the line of fire. It is during the Mexican-American War. And there's sort of a little fanfare. There's a little ceremony. Everyone's in their military garb. But he's getting the eye from their little costumes. They look like little cute soldiers. And the General Slauson, is looking at John Boyd. And we sort of realize the general is on to him. And we see John sitting with all of the men afterwards, and everyone's beating a big, fat, bloody steak. And there's nothing else even on the plate. It's just a huge steak, and he's getting more and more nauseous looking at it. And he attempts to cut the steak, which is bloody, And we see him flashback to his dying comrade's face.
Oh, no.
His blood-covered face in the battlefield. And John leaps up from the table and runs outside to vomit.
Okay.
Which gives General Slauson an opportunity to confront him. And basically says, I know the truth about you. This medal is for bravery, but you are yourself a coward. And I'm not going to publicly expose you, but I'm going to basically exile you. You're going to be sent up into the mountains to California's Fort Spencer. And this is like the last fort before people go over the mountains.
Okay.
So it's just kind of like a refueling station or like a way station. Yeah. Like there's no
transient.
There's nothing around. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And everyone's passing through them. And John, who is clearly cowed by this, accepts the reassignment. And we do see the mountains are gorgeous. It's beautiful. And then, like, because it's a horror comedy, it's so interesting. It's shot very beautifully and seriously. But then, like, the credits sort of zoom. They, like, kind of ski in and out. Like, there's a little, like, skiing sound.
That they make
it is a wild point. Choice. It looks like it. And I did want to say that Antonia Bird was added as a director, like, once they started filming. Mm. And I would be interested to know, like, how much of this was supposed to be a full comedy, how much of this.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was it pitched as?
Yes, that's a great question. The original director was Milcho Manchevsky. Mm-hmm. And they shot this in Slovakia and Mexico. Oh. And apparently the original director got dismissed because he kept submitting more storyboards, and Fox 2000 didn't want to do what he wanted to do, essentially. So they dismissed him 3 weeks into filming. And I'm not clear whether it was more of a comedy or not, but I'll tell you what. The comedy elements killed me every fucking time because it's so out of the blue every time it happens. But it also works, shockingly. So we're finally at Fort Spencer again, you know, just sort of like, what? It's the 1840s. Right. So everything's made out of wood. There's like smoke coming out of a smokestack. Everyone's drunk. Everyone has raw faces and unwashed hair. John arrives at Fort Spencer with the aid of Martha, who's there's two Native American local people who work for the fort. So it's Martha and her brother, George. And they act as guides in the area for the guys who work at the fort. Mm-hmm. And when they arrive, there's seemingly no one there. So Martha finds blankets for him. And they all sleep in, like, a big, gigantic, like, communal building where it's, like, different rooms and then, like, that a big room in the middle. Oh, yeah. And you know it fucking stinks in there. And there's, like, a stable for the horses and an armory and, like, a smokehouse. So a bunch of different outbuildings, but this is the main building.
I imagine an outhouse somewhere because we're pre-plumbing.
Oh, and there's a fucking outhouse. Absolutely.
God, I mean, imagine, like, it's, like, gross enough that, like, there's no plumbing and you're kind of, like, having a weird diet. Throwing human meat in the mix, that's got to be a disaster.
Also, back then, I mean, you're drinking more alcohol than you're drinking water. Yeah. So for me, I would just constantly have diarrhea.
Yeah, nonstop diarrhea.
And we see, for John, this is obviously a downsize. So he's sort of pushing on the mattress, which is disgusting. And then he catches his eye in the mirror. It's like a little mirror in the back of the door. We suddenly flash back to the battlefield and we see the truth.
Okay.
Which is that as his men screamed for help, they started calling him Boyd. So I'm going to switch to Boyd, but it's John Boyd. So okay. I'm going to say Boyd. Boyd laid down in the dirt and pretended to be dead to survive as his men were killed around him. The fog of war, Allison.
I mean.
And we sort of realize that he is, in fact, a coward, that he allowed his men to die, and he did this to live. But it did work. So he finally meets with the head of the fort, which is Colonel Hart, Jeffrey Jones. He said, so a war hero. They sent a war hero to reward you with some of our beautiful California sun. Meanwhile, of course, it's freezing outside. He offers Boyd walnuts that Martha brought as a treat. And so, but there, he takes a gigantic book to smash the walnuts. Okay. So as he's talking, he's just smashing walnuts with a giant book, which I love.
So quirky.
Yeah. And he says, I'll be honest, this place thrives on tedium. And he says, like I just said, like, we're basically just a way station for groups moving west. So when it's winter, nobody comes. Mm-hmm. So because they come in the spring, the summer, fall, and then winter is locked down because of all the snow. So the people who are here now, adding you, that's who's going to be here for the next, like, 3 to 4 months. So it's Boyd, Colonel Hart, who's speaking. Toefler, who is sort of our religious, religiously minded Christian mm-hmm. private. Major Knox, who is a full alcoholic and is just constantly drunk all the time.
Cool.
Private Reich, who Hart describes as our soldier. And they cut to Reich, and he's standing shirtless in a freezing stream screaming. And then they cut back, and Hart says, maybe steer clear of him. And it's just a perfect, you're like, oh, okay. He's crazy.
Got it.
And it's played by Neil McDonough, who's been in a million things. I will always think of Minority Report. He was in Desperate Housewives. That's where I first heard of him.
Yeah.
I guess he was in the Arrowverse, which, oh, is it? Yeah, Yellowstone. You know, Bleach Blonde, like Platinum Blonde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, but it's a very funny role for him. It's such a funny shot to like cut to him screaming. And then there are George and Martha, who they live in, they're like a teepee, creating a little distance between them and these guys who all absolutely stink and have like herpes sores all over their faces. Ugh. And then finally, Private Cleves, who is a 1840 stoner played by David Arquette. We see him smoking with George and just giggling. So that night, everyone has dinner together in the main room. And Hart goes, so did anyone do anything today? And they all laughed because they're like, there's literally, we're just going to survive the winter.
Sitting around.
Yeah. So the next day, a huge snowstorm sweeps over the camp, and it's beautiful. And oh, I miss snow. I do wish.
Well, we don't have it here either.
Hollywood sign. So. Yeah. Well, yeah, I miss snow, I guess, from the past.
Yes. I miss the concept of snow that I formerly knew before climate change got worse.
And so we hear the voiceover of, I guess, after the incident where he played dead, Boyd had to talk to, like, a military, like, an interrogator. And they're like, what do you mean? He says, I froze behind enemy lines while my unit fought bravely. And we see him get picked up by Mexican soldiers, stacked in a pile of dead bodies. And so he is literally underneath what must be 6 or 8 other dead bodies. And he says he only escapes when the blood of his commanding officer, which is pouring out of this guy's broken open skull.
Jesus Christ.
The blood poured directly into Boyd's mouth. And that gave him the energy and the vitality to crawl out from the pile of corpses. And then getting a gun, single-handedly takes over the enemy command and wins.
Mm-mm.
And so the implication is that... It's getting the blood in his mouth right. made him able, kind of gave him a little bit of a superpower.
Yeah,
that
no,
moment.
That's not, you can't, you can't that's keep going with good. That line of thought.
But then once you know it, Allison, right? So back at the fort, we see that Martha and Private Cleves, they're going on a 3-day trip to buy supplies before the winter really begins. So they're getting salt, beans, meat, and oil, the 4 food groups.
Ooh.
And Hart warns Cleves, do not buy any loco weed, because marijuana, I suppose, and no women. And Cleves is like, well, I'm obviously going to buy both of those things.
Yes,
come on, sir. So they head out. So they're not here. Martha and Cleves are not here for what's about to happen. That night, we see Boyd look at his medal for bravery. And when Hart asks him, like, so what did you get that for? And he says, cowardice. And Hart, to his credit, is like, do you want to just go drink some of Nick's liquor?
Yeah.
Because like, he's passed out. Let's just get drunk. So they're all kind of like in each other's face. They're already kind of like grousing each other. Toefler is writing a religious hymn on a little organ. And so Hart yells at him to shut up and asks him to go get ice in this kind of humiliating way. But they're, you know, there's sort of like a warm camaraderie happening. Allison, Boyd looks out the window and sees a figure staggering up to the fort.
Oh, boy. You hate to see that.
Oh, yeah, no. In the middle of the night, in the middle of a snowstorm.
In the middle of
nowhere?
Rush
outside, in the middle of
Where'd you come
nowhere.
From?
And they find him, and he passed out in the snow. He's you know, obviously has hypothermia. They drag him inside, and they heat a bunch of water, and they throw him in a tub. And everyone's helping, like, to rub his limbs and revive him. And they put him in bed near the fire, and they have Toefler monitor him. And it's only Boyd who sees that, underneath the coat, the man has his clothes, his shirt is stained with blood.
Mm.
So the next day, the man awakens, and Toefler runs to get everybody. And Toefler tries to wake Major Knox, but Major Knox is blind drunk. So yeah. He like doesn't even get up. He's like, please don't bother me. There's nothing to do. So they gather around the man who is known as Calhoun. And he says he was out there for 3 months, stuck in the mountains. And Hart says, well, did you have food?
Yeah.
And the man says, we didn't. You should have seen me 3 months ago. And Wright kind of pushes him. He said, well, yeah, but no one could live on no food for three months. And Calhoun says, I said there was no food. I didn't say there was nothing to eat. And then Allison, he tells his story.
It's like so, everybody in this movie has eaten a person.
Yeah. A lot of that going around, Allison. He and Calhoun and six of his fellow, they call them migrants on Wikipedia, which I think is an interesting way. I guess they were, migrating. I would say settlers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Settlers. They were working under their guide, Colonel Ives. And apparently Colonel Ives is the one that Calhoun said pitched them on a newer, shorter route to like get through the mountains quicker,
okay.
Which is what happened to the Donner Party. They were trying a new route. And needless to say, the route was a bust and they were stranded in a storm and had to hide in a cave. But then the storm didn't pass. It literally just winter started. Mm. So then they are just stuck there. There wasn't even an opportunity to get off the mountain. He says over the next 3 months, they ate the oxen, the horses, even his own dog. And even that only lasted a month. I was like, oh my God. And it isn't seven people, so it would be a lot of food, you know.
And like, I would imagine you need, like when it's cold, you need more food.
Yeah. That's a great point.
I don't know.
We're not nutritious, but it adds up to me.
Yes.
And he says after that, they ate their belts, their shoes. They would dig roots
out
of the ground.
I don't want to eat a belt.
What do you eat? Nothing. They were also digging up roots out of the ground because, like, you know, there's not much nutrition in the roots. I was like, also the ground would be frozen.
Right.
Like,
what's happening?
Yeah. Oh, Allison, one of the men died, Jones, and Calhoun was out getting firewood. And when he came back, he found the rest of the party cooking Jones's legs. And he says, if I had been there, would I have stopped them? Because I'll tell you.
I stepped inside that cave, smell of meat, cooking. I learned a lot. And then things got out of hand.
A line that is both so scary and so funny, he goes. And then things got out of hand. That's such a funny way to describe cannibalism.
Out of hand.
Things getting out of hand.
Just like you're having like a chill wine night and somebody's like, should we just have a little bit of tequila? Like that's out of hand. Like,
yes, like,
we ate one person and then it got worse. Like
things got out of hand. He says, I ate sparingly. Others did not. Mm. And the meat only lasted a week, Allison. And then they were hungry again. Only this time the hunger was different. More severe and more intense. And Colonel Ives, the guide for the group, he couldn't be satisfied.
Oh, no.
So he began to kill the members of the group. And everyone was so starving, they kind of like, as long as he was doing it, I think the implication is like, well, Colonel Ives is doing it.
Then I get, yeah, it's like he's in charge.
I'm allowed to eat it.
Yeah.
So in the end, it was the colonel. It was Mrs. McGreedy. Just the one woman with them.
Yeah.
And Calhoun, and he says, I should have saved her. I should have gotten out of there, but I was a coward. So I did the only thing I thought to do, which is I just ran away.
I mean,
because I knew it was going to be me or her, and I
didn't want to get eaten.
Me.
So,
yeah. And Hart says, so this woman and this man, they're still up on the mountain, right? He's like, yeah, I just left. He's like, well, then we have to go try to rescue them. It's our jobs.
No, it's
and
not.
Colonel, I know, but Colonel Hart does take this very seriously. And it's like, if he'd been like, yeah, they're probably, those motherfuckers are dead. Also, one of them's dead. The other one ate obviously.
Right. She's dead.
Yeah. But Hart, I mean, listen to his credits. Like, if they're still alive, we are obligated to God and America to try to find them. And this, of course, will lead us down the primrose path to more cannibalism. And they suit up.
So much cannibalism. Like, and the fact that it's coming kind of from two ends.
Girl. It's so much cannibalism in this movie. You don't even know. But it's really great. It is like once the door is open, it's like, what are we going to do? Not commit cannibalism?
Right. Yeah.
But they get suited up and they grab, like, you know, their muskets and stuff. But George, one of the Native American guides, stops them and shows them, of course, a scroll. Because you have to look at a scroll or an old book. And he points to me and he says, this is like the, and he says the word Ojibwe. So I'm assuming he's saying that he's Ojibwe, but he also might be saying this is a legend that is originated then, but we also believe in it. But it's the Wendigo, which we also talked during Antlers, if you want to go back and listen to that one. And so Hart's sort of translating as he's speaking. He says, and we see this illustration. It's a man who is sort of transformed half into a beast who is eating another man. And basically the idea that – and I think it's like, yeah, obviously it's based on the taboo around eating human flesh, which is pretty strong across all cultures.
Yeah,
it's big thumbs down for the most part, cultures on that.
Not on board.
Outside of very particular situations, in which and one of those situations is someone's already dead, you have to eat them.
Survival,
like,
yeah.
I think we all kind of understand that that's what happens. Yeah. But the idea is like the myth says, in this telling of it, if a man eats another man's flesh, he steals his essence, but then his hunger becomes insatiable. Like you become an animal, you lose your human nature. But then the more he eats, the stronger he becomes, which I feel like it shouldn't work that way.
It absolutely like, it's like, should not work that way.
Yeah. And Hart says, well, your people don't really, they don't do that anymore, do they? And Judge is like, no. Do white people eat the body of Christ on Sundays? And Hart's like, that's a fair point. Because that is also our legend.
Right.
Is that, at least in Catholicism, that is actually his body and that's actually his blood. So it's like we're using, we're telling stories to teach about the world. Unfortunately, in this movie, Allison.
They're real.
A little more real, with at least with regards to eating the body and the blood. So they're off, and Knox stays behind, partly because he's like, well, someone has to be there, and he's like second in command, and also he's blind drunk.
Yeah.
So we see him run past Hart. Hart's trying to tell him, like, we're leaving, here's what's happening, and Knox just runs into the outhouse to vomit. So he doesn't, I mean, he's not even, like, cognizant.
Ugh, I would just throw up on the ground.
But he probably has done that so much, so, like, you can't do that anymore.
Okay, sure.
You at least have to go outside the fort. Hart gives Knox the keys to the arsenal and reminds him that Martha and Private Cleves are on the supply run, so they'll be back in 2 days. Hart and Boyd see that Calhoun is also getting dressed. They're like, are you going to come with? He's like, I have to. There's literally no way you're going to be able to find them. We were just in a cave in the mountains.
Right. That's
so
correct.
How the fuck are you get there? Yeah. So off they go. They're climbing up the mountains, and it is gorgeous. Of course, would not be able to do any of this. No. They're, like, in heavy coats and robes going up these, like, snowy, just, like, the side of a hill. And they arrive at this peak. It's gorgeous. And Boyd has the opportunity to sort of go to a side to talk to Calhoun and be like, you know, about eating human flesh and drinking human blood.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were, like, physically changed? Did you feel, like, energized?
Yes.
And Calhoun says, I do remember a certain virility. Just then, Allison, Toefler, a poor Christian bastard, slips and tumbles down the mountainside and lands on a bunch of rocks. And he's alive, but he's badly injured.
Yes.
And they haul him up. He's bleeding. He looks like he's broken his ribs and sets up camp. And but everyone's like, we're going to bed down for the night and keep going tomorrow. Excuse me. And as night descends, Allison, we hear Toefler screaming.
No.
And he shouts, pointing at Calhoun, who has literally, obviously, has blood on his mouth,
no.
says, he was licking me! He was licking me!
Licking?
He was licking the blood that was oozing out of his wound.
Ew.
And Calhoun's like, no, no, no. There's been a misunderstanding. Literally, there's blood on his mouth. He's like, no, no. Actually, what was going on, Reich just fully assaults him, like enraged. But Hart breaks it up and it says, Reich, you help Toefler get his bandages back on. And Boyd and Hart confront Calhoun. And Calhoun's like, I'm so sorry. I was asleep. I thought I was a nightmare. And I woke up and I found myself doing it. I just restrain me because I don't think I could help this.
Oh, my God.
This is bigger than me. Please. And so they end up, they tie his wrist, and then Reich has him like on a lead, like a dog. And they're walking up, you know, still trying to find the cave. And George takes Boyd aside and just says, it's a Wendigo.
Yeah.
Bitch, it's a Wendigo.
It's the Wendigo.
Allison, I'm going to ask you now, actually, because things are about to go from bad to worse. Allison,
things are
going to
get out of hand.
The movie, things are going to get a little out of hand. Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
I'm going back to the fort. And then,
yeah, are you allowed to do that? I'm like, would you, if you get trouble, what do you get, like, discharged? Like, it's right. not like,
I'm kind of
oh,
like,
I'm going to lose my health insurance.
How do I defect from the U.S. Army so I don't have to be part of this anymore? Like, that would be my number yeah. one. Like, I got to get, like, I got to get out of here. Like, I got to go, I'll just go be a farmer somewhere and not be around many other people and forget all of this ever happened.
Yeah, I feel like back then you could just walk away and assume a new identity and yeah. no one's going to really ask
right.
you for
there's
documents
not like a
anything.
Digital footprint of who you are. Like, just no. leave.
No, you're good to go. Ruin is brought to you by Kariuma. Kariumas have been our go-to sneakers for a while because they're really comfortable, go with everything, and they're made with consciously sourced materials. Allison, I'll tell you, I love to wear Kariuma sneaker. When I'm sneaking up behind you in the dead of night, mm. you can't hear me coming because they're so soft. They're basically mm-hmm. noiseless, and they're incredibly comfortable. So it's easier for me to do my dark deeds.
Yes, and I can also sense, like, that you look great while you're behind me mm-hmm. about to scare the living hell out of me. And last year, we collaborated with Kariuma to create No Steps Back sneakers. And we can't believe they have now designed a second limited edition collaboration with us, the Love It or Leave It sneaker.
These shoes have a colorful design with lots of Easter eggs. I mean, not Taylor Swift-level Easter eggs. We're not insane. Just fun stuff, like pundit on a surfboard.
Plus, a portion of the proceeds from every pair sold is donated to VSA's Every Last Vote Fund.
And can you say about it, any of your other dumb shoes?
No.
Huh?
No.
Can
what kind of things do your shoes do? Just let you wear them? No, this is better.
Jack shit. That's what it sounds like. Our first Kariuma collab sold out super fast, so if you want a pair for yourself or the Love It fan in your life, make sure to snag one now. They make the perfect gift for the holiday season with free returns.
Just head to crooked.com/store. That is crooked.com/store.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Ruined is brought to you by Factor. It is so hard to plan and prepare and eat healthy meals every single night of the week, but I'm super excited about Factor. You get every meal is fresh, never frozen, and is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. I mean, this is exactly what I need. It's spring. I want to do stuff. I want to stay fueled, but I don't want to waste any time preparing or shopping or doing any of the stuff that it is to feed yourself as an adult.
Absolutely, and I feel like we've all had the experience of like getting home and being like, oh my God, I can't cook an entire meal. So for me, Factor is a great option in terms of like having food there, like having food on hand. It's also me not wasting groceries. You know what I mean? You can imagine, you see what I'm like on the pod. You can imagine what my fridge looks like. In this way, I have prepared meals ready to go. They're healthy. They are waiting for me.
And it's great because you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. So like if you're going to be eating out a lot, you can do fewer. If you're like in a kind of a vegan mode, you can do vegan and you can pause and reschedule deliveries all to just suit your lifestyle. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/ruined50 and use the code RUINED50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code RUINED50 at factormeals.com/ruined50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. The next day they walk on and they finally find the cave. And as soon as Calhoun sees it, he starts freaking out. He's screaming like, no, 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 they're going to kill me. Just the sight of the cave is sending him into like mm-hmm. a madness. Yeah. And he starts like running around, acting crazy, like making animal noises. So everyone's like, well, we'll wait outside with him. And then Reich and Boyd, you go inside and check things out and see if anyone's still alive right. in there. Inside, they find a trail of human blood.
Cool.
Leading to Allison... a hole straight into the floor of the cave.
No. No.
And Reich climbs down into it.
Also,
it's like
no.
Absolutely never, no. ever. In a also, like, I would walk outside and just get shot in the head if I needed to.
To what end?
I guess in case they're down there. And they might have been, but they find a disgusting scene. It's covered in bloody human bones, a rotting head with hair, clothes everywhere. And skeletons.
Head with hair.
Allison, Reich turns and finds All of the bodies have been hung up like butcher style and skeletonized. And on one of them, he sees the shirt says Colonel Ives, which means Calhoun ate Colonel Ives.
Yeah. Okay. So he lies to them.
He's like, wait a minute. This is the motherfucker that ate all these people.
Yeah.
And now
he's looking for more people.
Exactly. So Wright screams, it's a trap. And then in excellent movie logic, drops his lantern, which immediately bursts into fire and then destroys all the evidence. Like, it's just, and I mean, there were so many fires back then. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that makes sense. But just, it's like, God damn it, Reich. Like, you had all this stuff lined up, and then now you're burning it all down. So, of course, then he and Boyd run outside. And again, everyone's outside watching Calhoun, who's, like, panting and starts clawing in the dirt like an animal.
Oh, my God.
And, like, running around and making animal noises. You know, George is like, I fucking told you it's a goddamn Wendigo.
Damn Wendigo.
And Reich and Boyd run out of the cave right as Calhoun grabs Hart's knife and stabs Hart in the chest.
Tough.
And George tries to throw a tomahawk. So he does tomahawk it at Calhoun. But then Calhoun grabs Hart's body to use as a human shield.
Okay.
And he is hit again. Calhoun then grabs Hart's gun and shoots George. So unfortunately, George has died.
All right. That's sad.
Toefler, who is injured and can't run, just closes his eyes in terror, and Calhoun goes to fire on him, but the gun is empty. And he pulls the knife out of Hart's body, and he turns to Toefler with a smile on his face, and Calhoun tells Toefler, run. And this is when the music kicks in.
Oh, my God. Stop.
It might as well be Yakety Sax. It is like comedy running, like... It both works and also is the craziest goddamn choice. Like, no horror. I just would have a hard time imagining that unless you're in a broader comedy. But it works. Like, the tone is a hard one to nail, and you wouldn't think it would work, but it really does.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe it was like, oh, it's too dark too soon because there's a bunch of other stuff. Like, we're still, I mean, this is barely into the second act. Yeah. Like, well, we can't have it be so intense too soon. Mm-hmm. But it's such a jarring choice. Boyd runs over to Colonel Hart, but he is, of course, dying. And Reich says, leave him. We have to save Toefler. Like, Hart's already dead. And so they abandon him. And, well, they chase this motherfucker through the forest. And unfortunately, they do find Toefler, poor little Toefler. But his torso has been ripped open and looks like a human being has been eating it.
Yeah.
And this enrages them. And Reich says, let's go kill that bastard. But Boyd is still a coward. This is what we're still saying. Is like, he's like, I have to go back. He says, I'm going to go back. Where it's like, again, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
But at least if we know we were to say it, it would be like, you know I'm a coward. I'm not going to do that.
Right. Yes, exactly. Not a decorated war hero.
Yeah, come on. But Reich snarls, find him. Like, he's not accepting any of this. Unfortunately, Allison, eating Toefler has given Calhoun, like, it's not super strength. He's just, like, strength like a strong man on his best day. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, rather than what he is, which is a man who almost died in the mountains. But now he's, like, so invigorated. Yeah. And he takes the knife that he pulled out of Hart's body and he throws it into Reich's chest. And not only does it stab Reich in the chest, he flies off a cliff.
Well, like, that's not helpful for Calhoun. Like, can't eat him.
Well, you'd think so.
Oh, no.
But he's got a one-track mind.
Yeah.
Like you said, he has an enthusiasm for consuming human flesh. So finally, on the top of this cliff is just Boyd and Calhoun. And Boyd is able to shoot Calhoun at point-blank range, and he collapses. Only to sit up, mouth full of blood, and smile. This mother, I mean, to be fair, he was shot in the shoulder, but, like, it would definitely take you down.
Especially if, like, you are someone who had been, like, starving in the woods.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, I guess the laws of cannibalism are changing a little bit of the reality here. But, like, you wouldn't be, like, up and laughing.
Exactly. And so I think we're thinking that cannibalism does provide him, again, a level of vitality. And he backs Boyd up against the cliff face. And Boyd, faced with a choice between being eaten and jumping, Allison, he just fucking jumps off the cliff.
Yeah.
And that's not cowardice.
No,
I admire that.
I respect that.
I wouldn't be able, I would be too scared, I think.
I think so too, but
Fortunately, he falls into the tree line, and the tree sort of softens his landing, and he hits the ground. But what he does, he also hits Reich, who's dying. He's not totally dead.
Right.
Slams into his body, and they both start tumbling down the mountain.
Oh, my God.
And like head over heels tumbling, and they eventually land in a fox den, so like a hole in the ground. They like land, and there's all this like shrubbery hanging over.
Yeah.
So Reich gets caught upside down. Boyd's on the ground in the bottom of this hole, and Reich is dangling right over him, caught in tree branches. And in his dying rage, Reich puts his hands on Boyd's neck and tries to strangle him, but he's too weak and he dies. Wow. As if that wasn't bad enough, Allison.
It's pretty bad.
Calhoun finds his way and comes down the mountain to try and eat both of these motherfuckers.
I mean, this guy. I don't like him.
Again, he's never going to... Yeah. If I have two dead bodies you could be eating, I'm going to find them. And he's finding them by smell. So we hear him sniffing the air, Allison.
No, that's so weird.
But because he's sort of like underneath the ground, like where he'd be able to smell, like he's sort of logistically hidden. So Calhoun can't find them. Right. And he walks by. Night falls and Boyd tries to move, but his leg is broken. And so badly, it's a classic Hollywood break where the bone is jutting through the skin.
Yes, yes, yes.
Back then, I'm like, that guy's getting gangrene and dying. Yeah. You are dying.
You are dead.
Like, best you could do is amputate, but like there's not even a town. Yeah.
You know, I don't even know what you do now when that happens.
I mean, I think we have antibiotics, but I think probably if you get gangrene, if you really have it, they might have to amputate as well. But so he puts a stick to bite on, and then he jams the bone back into his leg, which I don't think would work or like anything better. Back at the fort, Private Cleves and Martha come back, don't know any of this is going on. So it's them and Knox, right? And so like they're just like setting things up, like getting firewood or whatever. But Martha could tell something is wrong, and I don't want to imply that. I assume it's some sort of Native American mysticism, but also she's an intuitive woman, and they've been gone for a while. Yeah, so, but she definitely has this moment of looking in the mountains like, oh boy.
It's like you could tell things were like, what's the best case scenario?
Yes.
They find the cannibal? Like,
I know. Yeah, right. They have to like wrestle a cannibal to the ground and bring him back to the fort, and then he's going to be there until he can be taken to cannibal jail.
Yeah.
We see Calhoun dragging the other men's corpses into the cave, laughing and sort of like making like chittering animal noises. Still in the fox den, Boyd is sort of talking to Reed's corpse and was like, do you mind if I take your coat? It's going to be cold tonight. And he can sort of hear Calhoun's laughter all around him. Meanwhile, we see Calhoun like having fun. Like Calhoun's like his shirt's all stained with blood the cave is near a creek.
Mm-hmm.
It's a creek in the cave. And he picks up a stone to skip it. And when he picks it up, he says, nice. And then he skips it. Like, he's having the time of his life now that he's, like, cannibalizing. But Boyd's in this hole, and he says to Reich's body, because, again, I think when he's, like, moving through his cowardice, that's his hero's journey. So he says, do I stay here or do I go down the hill? I don't know what to do. Tell me what to do. And he sees, like, visions of the Wendigo scroll. And finally, Allison, Boyd takes the knife out of Reich's body.
Oh, boy.
And he starts cutting into him and eating the meat.
Yeah. I mean...
But, yeah, at that point.
What, I, like, there's a crazed cannibal on the loose looking for you. You're injured. You know that human blood and meat will energize you to perhaps escape, like... I don't know. I don't know if I could ever do it, but I guess I get it.
Yeah, no, I would just freeze to death. Yeah, I can't be out here. Also, the idea of like eating raw human meat.
Right.
Like cooked is horrible, but raw human meat just extra, off of some guy you just met. Yeah.
Some guy you just met.
But in the morning, we see Boyd emerge, and he looks worse for wear, but he looks a lot better than he did last night. And he staggers down the mountain, and he makes it to the fort alive. And Knox tends to his wounds and puts him to bed, but Boyd is plagued by restless dreams. And so he goes to Martha and says, let's say the Wendigo's real. How do you stop it? And Martha says, you don't.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. There's not like a magic trick. And this is like the analogy. This is what we're talking about, like white American settlers and Manifest Destiny.
You'll never be satiated. Like, there's never enough. There's never, you're never like, ah, yes, I'm satisfied. I've reached the end. I have everything I need. Like, there's the more.
Yeah, and I think, I was just talking about this with my friend yesterday. We're like, I think as people who don't have, you know, we're not billionaires. So it's like, you always do think that there's a certain amount of, like, there's a limit where it's like, and there are certain rich people who are like, give away their money and they understand it. But for other people, just the having so much makes you want more. Yes. Like, it's like the human, it shuts off that part of your, So it's like, oh, so then that makes us approach billionaires with, or like rich people with a lack of awareness about what that is, you know? And she says, the Wendigo only takes, he never gives. To escape, the only way to escape the Wendigo is to die.
Oh, God. I think I would just die at this point. There's no, like, what are you even living for?
Right. Or it's one thing to be like, I have to get home to my wife and kids, or like, I got a sick mother, like something to be like, I have to do it. It's like, nah, I'm just some guy, I have to keep eating human flesh.
Who's like, also like living a lie as like a war hero, but actual coward, and like, you have nothing, and you're just like in this awful place and eating people. You, like, just die.
To be fair, you do look like Guy Pearce.
Good for him. That I don't hate.
Yeah. So word is sent to General Slauson about everything that's happened, and Slauson and two of his officers come to Fort Spencer to sort of like take everyone's statement. Mm-hmm. And they sit Boyd down now. They go like, okay, we found the cave. There is no sign of anyone. There's no blood, no bones, nothing. Now, we know there was a fire. Mm-hmm. So I think we're to think that everything was destroyed. Yeah. So, but then Boyd can't be like, I saw, I don't know how, I mean, I guess they would be destroyed. But it's like, I, you know, all that evidence no longer exists. And they say, and then you told us about the Wendigo. We need facts, Boyd, not fairy tales. Mm-hmm. So, and Slauson basically is like, I did you a solid of not publicly humiliating you. I sent you here. Yeah, I was exiled, but also it's like, you still have a reputation. You still have a job. I could have kicked you out for what you did.
Yeah.
But you did take over that the Mexican army base because of somehow you figured did that. But now you're giving us this crazy story. I think when we first came here, you had a fever. You were really sick. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not lying if you correct it. You're just correcting that you were unwell. So maybe you got separated from your party up there. You don't know what happens. Mm-hmm. Either ways, I advise you to change your story. Like, you really just try to, like, help him. Like, don't go on record. And, of course, Boyd, in stepping out of his cowardice and into his heroism, is like, no, I know what I saw.
Yes.
Wendigo, skeletons. And the general's like, okay, dude, man. All right, sure. Allison, to replace the late, great Colonel Hart, a new colonel has arrived. And we only see him from behind, but I think you know exactly who it's going to be. Mm. And Martha and Cleve see the new colonel, but they were on the supply run, so they did not they weren't there when all this was happening.
Oh, no.
So finally, General Slauson says there's going to be a new interim colonel until we find someone to permanently replace Hart. Please welcome and meet your new colonel, Colonel Ives. Allison, it is, of course, Calhoun.
Yes.
Who, instead of having a big shaggy beard, is kind of like a very neat military mustache and goatee and, like, looks very, like, he looks incredible.
I mean, how did he do that?
I guess he ate so many bodies that he could, like, shave? I don't know. And Boyd does a classic 1800s thing where he stands up in shock and then he just faints. He, like, collapses. And Boyd tells Lawson, that's him, that's Calhoun. If you don't believe me, ask Knox. He was here the day that Calhoun arrived. So they go to Knox. Knox says, I was ill that day. He was just blackout drunk. Yeah. But he says, I remember the guy that I remember had a beard. This guy doesn't.
But, like,
so
that's such a...
I know. But it's the 1840s. Right. I think people were like, he didn't have a beard. It's a different guy.
Yeah.
Hang him, unfortunately. And Boyd says, I shot Calhoun when we were struggling, you know, on the cliff. I shot him in the shoulder. So tell him to show you his shoulder.
Yeah.
So then they have to invite Colonel Ives in, who we all, of course, know is Calhoun. And he says, I'm like, take it. So he, like, has him show one shoulder and then the other shoulder. And Allison, there are no bullet wounds. And the general and his men leave. Like, we're gonna write up a full report. And there's apparently a rainstorm coming in.
Oh, good.
So we're going to leave you in Colonel Ives's capable hands. By which we mean we're going to leave and leave you here with
a cannibal as a babysitter. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Boyd walks in to go talk to Cleves and Martha. And then when he does, he finds Cleves gossiping. And basically, Cleves is like, I think Boyd killed everyone up there. And now he's saying the new colonel did it. Like, I think he's lost his goddamn marbles. And Boyd yells at them and he takes like this gigantic cleaver they were cutting with. Next thing you know, we see Boyd stabbing Cleves to death and then tearing out his heart to eat it. And when he looks at Cleves' dead body, Cleves is laughing. But it's just a daydream, Allison. It's not real. It's not real. That night, they all sit together. Knox and Cleves are playing chess while Knox gets drunk. Martha is widowing an arrowhead. Colonel Ives is reading. And a storm is sweeping in. Allison, who will survive?
Who will survive?
Oh, boy. I'm going to guess they all die and Calhoun eats all of them and then is off doing his thing.
Great. Excellent. Excellent guess. All right.
We're just popping in.
Oh, hey.
Hey, hi. We're popping in. Hi. Sorry to bother you. We just wanted to let you know about yet another ruined live show that we are doing for the month of November, and it will be Monday, November 27th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific.
Well, yeah, we're mixing it up a little bit.
We're mixing it up. We're doing things a little later because it's a Monday. We want everybody to be able to finish whatever they do for a job if you have one and be able to join us for another very fun live show because we'll be doing
Thanksgiving, which of course is the new Thanksgiving-themed Eli Roth movie. That comes out this month. Just to read the log line, an axe-wielding maniac terrorizes residents of Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Perfect.
Well, baby, what else do you need to hear, okay? Yeah. So go ahead, make yourself one of those sandwiches where it's like turkey and cranberry and then stuffing and two pieces of bread. Make that for yourself.
And then join us by going and getting your ticket at moment.co/ruined. That is moment.co/ruined. And you can get your tickets, $10. $20 Patreon members, you know you're going to get yours in your email inbox the day of the show, and we'll have all the regular fun, the chat, merch, you know, we'll all talk about our Thanksgivings and how those were.
Oh.
Hopefully better than the people in this film.
Absolutely. I can only imagine. So join us Monday, November 27th, and we'll see you there. See you. You'll see us, but we'll know
that
you're
there. We can tell.
We love you.
Bye.
So everyone heads off to bed except Boyd, who is too paranoid and refuses to sleep. So he's basically standing outside the main building holding the butcher knife from the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And Colonel Ives steps aside to smoke. And Colonel Ives says to Boyd, you know, I found your Reich up there, or what was left of him. And he knows that Boyd is cannibalizing him. He says, you know, before it all began, before I first found out, I had tuberculosis, I had horrible migraines, and I was suicidal all the time. I was actually on my way to a sanitarium. I was actually on my way to a sanitarium when our party got stranded. I was at my wit's end. And then on the way there, a guide told me about the Wendigo. And I thought, well, you know what is worth a shot?
It wasn't a prescription.
But he took it right to CVS. And he tells him, I ate 5 men in 3 months. My TB is gone. My suicidal thoughts are gone. I reached Denver that spring feeling happy, healthy, and virile. Mm. And I was like, that is the most terrifying and depraved thing to hear.
I hate it.
Because it's like, it's one thing to be like, I'm a vampire because I can't help it, or I'm a werewolf because I've changed. It's out of my control. But then it's like, I just feel so much better.
Right. It's like somebody
and that's
like
why
being
I'm
like,
a cannibal.
I love Pilates.
Yes, and that's why I had to kill Gwyneth Paltrow. You know, it's like, well, that's not worth, like, it's like, you can't do it just if you feel better, you know? And then Boyd says, well, did you eat the woman? Did you eat her? And he says, look, I don't get it. You've already tried it. You know what it can do. You know the effects of it. Why are you resisting it? Is it morality? Morality, the last bastion of the coward? And Colonel Ives, I'm just going to call him Colonel Ives the rest of the movie.
But we know it's Calhoun. Got it.
Yeah. So Colonel Ives comes up to him, and Boyd slashes him with the knife, and it cuts Boyd's hand. And it is almost like this little bit of a homoerotic moment where Colonel Ives holds up his bleeding palm to Boyd's face and sort of holds it under his nose and says, do you smell that? And it's sort of like, it's like taunting him with like, I know exactly the reaction you're having. Mm-hmm. And But again, Boyd is doing everything he can to fight the urge. So he tackles Colonel Ives and puts the knife to his throat. But then Martha stops him and says, if you die. And Martha rushes over and puts her knife to Boyd's throat and says, if he dies, you die.
Okay.
And I don't know whether she's just being moral or if that's literal. Right. But either way, neither of them are dead. Everyone else rushes out. And Knox, of course, sees that it was Boyd who attacked first. So he tells Martha, get Cleaves and you two put Boyd under arrest. But here's the thing, Allison. Cleaves is nowhere to be seen. Oh. So Martha has to go look for him. And so she's wandering around. It's nighttime. Yeah. It's windy. It's disgusting out. She sees the door of the stables banging open. She goes thinking maybe he's inside there. All of the horses have been killed and eaten. At a certain point in time, how much meat can a man physically eat?
Right. Like,
why kill all the horses? Kill one of the horses.
At least then it stays fresh when you want the next one. Like, it just seems like not the plan. Yes. And also, like, I eat one steak and I'm like, good for a while.
Right. Also, if horses work, if the horses work, why not just kill animals? Right. Then it's not cannibals. You're just eating horse meat.
It makes no sense.
They don't explain that. But she's terrified. She runs back and she runs to the main building and she's yelling through the window at Knox saying, the horses are all dead. And when he runs over the window, he's like, what? Blood starts to spatter on her face from the roof. And she looks up and Knox runs out and joins her. They find Cleve's dead, brutalized corpse on the roof of the building. So, of course, Knox, not knowing anything about all the cannibalism, he assumes Boyd killed Cleves. And so they chain up Boyd in his room. So he's basically chained to his bed so he can't leave.
Now he's just a prisoner.
Exactly. In the morning, Knox asks Martha to, like, basically we need someone to walk on foot to the next fort, which is where General Slauson should be. So would you walk there? And she's like, bye. Yeah,
that's the journey I would like to be. I'm like, oh, I'll run an errand if it gets me out of this absolute nightmare.
Absolutely. And as soon as she's out of the picture, Colonel Ives shuts the fort gate and puts down like a big log.
Like
the gigantic version of a door lock. And they are locked in now. Right? And we see Boyd chained up in his room, extremely vulnerable, you know, can't do anything. And he's calling for Major Knox over and over again to try to explain what's going on. And as he does, Allison, we watch Colonel Ives make what looks to be a delicious stew over the fire.
Mm-hmm. Horse stew?
Knox? Yes,
probably people.
Unfortunately, it is, of course, a human stew. A cosmic gumbo. Oh,
people stew. Cosmic gumbo.
Knox enters and says, do you need help me with that stew? And Ives says, no. Maybe later you can contribute. But right now it's fine. And Knox also notes that, you know, my sword is missing. His decorative sword above the mantle is gone. And Colonel Ives is like, that's crazy. Goddamn thing. I don't even know.
Where is it?
And Boyd, meanwhile, is just yelling like, Knox, it's him. He did this. He killed everybody. Yeah. He killed Hart. And so Knox eventually just goes and shuts the door to Boyd's room. And when Knox turns, we see his sword swing down and cut his head off. But it's not Colonel Ives who did it, because then we turn and see Colonel Ives, who has basically no reaction just seeing this. He's stirring the pot of human stew.
Yeah, he's focused on the culinary arts at this point.
Exactly. And Boyd hears the head slicing and calls through the door like, Knox, are you okay? And the door opens to reveal a very much still alive Colonel Hart.
Okay.
And Colonel Ives shouts over to them, I told you my regiment had curative powers. So basically Boyd realizes that Hart survived through, of course, cannibalism. And he's like, well, you killed Cleves and the horses. And Hart says, you know, I thought I died in the mountains. I think I may have actually died. But then I woke up in the cave to Ives feeding me. And now I've never felt better.
Oh, no.
And Boyd says, okay, so you guys are going to kill me and eat me. They say, no, it's actually very lonely as a cannibal. We want you to join us. And we'll live here. And when people come through, we won't kill everyone, but we'll pick a few. And then anyone who disappears, they disappear to the mountains. It's extremely dangerous. And then this is what he also talks about, manifest destiny. he's like, can you blame us? Can you blame us for any of this? This is out of our hands. He says,
and this country is seeking to be whole, stretching out its arms and consuming all it can. And we merely follow.
So it's like, oh, we've already rationalized it because we rationalized Manifest Destiny. Right. Which I did appreciate that they were using that as the metaphor, yes, of like white men's insatiable avarice. It's like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And their plan is that Boyd will be there the fort with them. And when spring comes, there'll be a steady stream of people resettling.
Keep eating people forever.
Exactly. And he even said, eventually, we'd like to get General Slauson on board. Because when you're a general, you could do whatever you want. So if he's in our pocket, then we could be eating people nonstop, maybe. And Ive says to Boyd, you're already one of us. You just need to give in to it. And Boyd says, I can't. So I think this is final stand of like, I am not a coward.
Okay.
I cannot do this.
Not a coward, not a camel.
Exactly. Colonel Ives nods his head and then stabs Boyd in the torso. Oy. And tells him, don't worry, it's not fatal, provided you take the necessary precautions. And he serves him up a bowl of human flesh stew. Aye. So then it's literally, if you do not eat this right now, you will bleed out and die.
I'd take that. So I would just die.
I would. Oh, see, I would eat the stew. I think at that point, I would be so, the pain of dying would be so scary, I would eat the stew. But, and Boyd tries to fight it. Like, the other two guys are just eating the stew. They're like, oh my God, the stew. The stew's hitting. And Boyd's trying to fight, but he starts bleeding from his mouth. And he's exhausted. And so finally, Alzi picks up his spoon. And he eats. The next day, Boyd looks great. I mean, he still looks horrible, but like
he's upright,
not dying, you know. And they sort of have this conversation with like Hart. He's like, "How do you do? Like, how could like when I met you, you seemed like a moral man. Like, you wanted to go help people in the mountain." And Hart's like, "You know, I realize now it's not about that. It's about happiness and how to achieve it." And he screams at Boyd, "Like, don't you understand? You're too naive. You have to kill to live." And Boyd, basically, like, we're having, like, the Hart is, like, has succumbed to the argument, and Boyd hasn't. But Boyd is like, I'm going to kill Colonel Ives. I'm going to kill him and stop him. And Hart, it has a moment of realization, and he unlocks Boyd's chains. And he says, take my knife, but before you go kill Ives, please kill me. You have to do it quickly. You're right. I can't live like this.
And no one can.
What we've already done is horrible. He's proposing, it's like, oh, so we're serial killers. And so Boyd slits his throat.
Okay, that's nice.
And as the blood jets out of Hart's throat against the window, we see a shot of Ives looking in and seeing this and understanding that Boyd has prevailed and that now Boyd's going to come for him. And now, basically, we see in the far distance, Martha and the general and the reinforcements are coming, but they're still really far away. So it's just a cat and mouse game between Boyd and Colonel Ives. And they're kind of like hiding and like tracking each other, stalking each other through the fort. And at a certain point, just for like, because he's a diva, Ives smears his forehead with a cross in blood.
He loves the pageantry of it.
Yeah. And then finally, he and Boyd just find each other. I don't know if it's like, it's like the tool shed, but it's gigantic. Like, it's just some big, like, utility, like, building, obviously made out of wood, and it's filled with farm implements. So then they're just grabbing farm implements and, like, stabbing each other with pitchforks, like, chopping at each other with cleavers. At one point, they're just, like, grabbing a log from the fire and slamming it into each other. And finally, Boyd gets Ives on the ground, and they're choking each other. And Ives takes Knox's sword and stabs it through Boyd's body to the hilt, through his back. So Boyd has been terribly injured. And in the brawling, they've like slammed into the supporting structures, which everything looks like is about to fall apart anyways. Yeah. And Boyd is able to get free, but the building itself falls on top of Ives. Okay. It still doesn't stop him. He has cannibal strength. And Ives finds Boyd and pulls the knife out of his back. So now Boyd's bleeding out. But they're still grappling, and Boyd gets up and grabs him standing and shoves him backwards onto the ground, onto something that you can't have this. Fatal, horror movie fatal mistake, 20,592. Never, ever have a huge, rusty bear trap
open
and ready to go on any floor in any building where a human might be. Also, they fall into it and it closes on both of them. And now they're trapped there. They physically cannot get out. And Ive says to him, if you die first, I'm definitely going to eat you.
Of course.
The question is, if I die first, what will you do? So I think the implication is like, if, let's say, Ives dies, there is a world in which I think we're to believe that Boyd could eat his body and then escape the bear trap. And just then, Martha and the general arrive. But of course, the general goes in the main house. Martha immediately, she knows something's up, so she's trying to find like any living person. And in the house, they can't find anyone right away, but the general sure does smell that delicious stew.
Oh, no.
And we see him take a big old ladle of hot human stew, Allison. Ooh. And he goes to town because that shit tastes delicious. Yeah. And honest to God, watching this, my mouth was filling with saliva. Like the stew, I know it was just normal stew. I want stew is what I'm saying.
Yeah, always.
But watching this, watching someone eat a cannibal stew, I'm like, I really wish. Ooh, it does look delicious. Savory. Piping hot. And out in the shed, in the bear trap, Ives dies first. And we see Martha open the door and makes eye contact with Boyd and sees the men caught there. And Allison, she just closes the door and walks out of the fort and leaves.
Yeah.
And Boyd, again, we know what, because he had to go on his hero's journey, so we know what he's going to do. He closes his eyes and he dies. And also Martha already told him, the only escape is death.
Like, and there is no solution. Right by dying.
Exactly. The end.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a fun one. I really like this movie.
Is great.
Allison, what are some fatal mistakes do you think they may have made in the movie Ravenous?
Fatal mistakes.
Well, the eating people.
Yeah. But what if you felt really good when you did it?
I'm sure it did. In the context of the movie, not like in reality.
Well, and also in real life, if you're so starving, I bet when you eat a person, you do feel a lot better.
You've eaten. You have like something in you that's like generating energy. But yeah, I guess. Also, like I would have like after like being like Boyd's like first, you know, cowardly earlier experience of like being stacked up with the other body. I'd be like, that's when I leave the military. Like. Yeah. I don't know. Just go live by yourself in the middle of the woods and defect because, like, you're not going to get, like, another good assignment, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess it's, like, he's so wounded by his own cowardice. Like, it's almost like that was another sign of his cowardice is that he will just go live in shame and sit in his shame forever. And it is only by murdering a maniacal, supervillain-level cannibal that he was able to redeem himself.
Yes.
And I do think he did redeem himself. But yeah, I think not believing in cannibalism was a huge mistake. Could have stopped at least when the general showed up, but they're like, we're not obviously going to believe you. And other than that, I mean, yeah, I just... Everything about, like, the idea of, like, oh, I'm a cannibal just because I feel so much better.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that's fun.
There's something about that that's so much scarier than it's like, that's out of my hand or something. And then finally, where would you place Ravenous on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I think this is a 4.5. Like,
okay,
it was,
great.
I feel like there was a lot of fun. And like the cannibalism and also a lot of blood makes it scary, but kind of a kooky film.
Yes, I agree. And the moments of comedy are perfect, but they are not scary.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. To hear that music, and which again we will drop in the clip. It is. I was like, wow. Okay. All right. I guess you don't want me to be scared right now. You want me to have the time of my life, and I really did. I'm gonna give this a 3 because there still are moments like where they're in the cave and they find the skeletons, and there is like the general griminess of the 1840s is a disgusting and off-putting in a way that I find kind of scary. But I think that feels right. Allison, thank you for doing this with
thank
me.
Thank you. Thank you for
every week.
A fabulous theme for the month. They ate, I mean, certainly in this film. They ate?
They ate. They ate.
And I can't wait to see what else we've got coming down the November movie pipeline.
Down the pipe? Down the windpipe?
Down the windpipe.
That's not how you eat. Stuff. Until next time.
Please.
Please do not. Do what you can not to eat each other. And until then,
keep it spooky,
everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Since you're listening to our show, we know you enjoy spooky stories, especially this time of year. So we'd like to tell you about Otherworld. The Washington Post has described Otherworld as the This American Life of ghost stories. But make no mistakes about it, these are far from the same old campfire stories you grew up with.
Each week on Otherworld, you'll hear credible first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something paranormal. The experiences shared on Otherworld are unlike any you've heard before.
These supernatural encounters are deeply personal, spine-chilling, and will leave you questioning the basic understanding of everything. All right, well, I gotta listen to this.
Yeah, so listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.